I'm Becca Lewis, and I'm your guide and host for the Shift the Story podcast, where we share tips and tools for making shifts in our lives from the inside out. My guest today is Sandy Hackett. Yes, the son of Buddy Hackett. I asked him if being the son of such a famous person made life easier or harder for him. Before he answered the question, he let me know that I had asked the wrong question. And then he shared his journey in life, full of shifts. He shared bits of wisdom from his dad, but the one word answer Buddy gave to Sandy in the midst of a major shift in Sandy's life is my favorite, and I have used it more than once on myself since I heard it. Nope, not sharing it now. You will have to listen. So come with me as we shift the story together. Hi. I'm talking to Sandy Hackett. This is our third attempt to speak together, right, Sandy?
Yes.
Yes. So we're talking today about shifts, as we're always talking about. And one of the things that I was interested in was, is it easier for you to make the changes in your life because you've been already started out as well-known being the son of Buddy Hackett, or is it harder?
I don't know how to answer that because I'm not sure I agree with the question, unfortunately.
That's all right. We make the question to work for you.
The problem in misconception, when you take anybody who's an offspring and so their fame comes vicariously from a parent. So when you say you're famous because of your father. So my father is famous and people recognize him. Am I famous? I don't consider myself famous. I have a little bit of notoriety. I have done some film and television, but I'm by no means a star. I haven't reached my father's plateau of success. But when someone says to me, what was it like growing up being the son of Buddy Hackett? That's all I knew. I don't know what it was like to grow up being your brother or the son of your parents or anything. All I knew is what I knew. I lived where I lived. I grew up how I grew. We could afford what we could afford. We couldn't afford what we couldn't afford. So I don't know the difference until you get out in the world many years later and you look back and you say, oh, well, the house I lived in, I thought, you know, at the time, that's all I knew. Then when I go where we live now, we're in a much smaller domicile than what I grew up in, but I find it unbelievably comfortable. My wife, who you know and worked with, we found what we think is a magical place because we live literally across the street from a beautiful park in Los Angeles. It's kind of like if we lived in New York, this would be the Central Park experience. Across the way, there's big buildings. They just opened this past weekend a brand new outdoor mall, which was very exciting and brings a lot to the area. But that's what you know. So, and then when I grew up, we had what some people might call a sizable house, but I had friends who had houses three times the size of ours. So
yes.
I go, and my house is bigger than other people. So you don't know where you fit in until all that. So when you say a shift, I think you got to kind of be more specific as to how do you go from here to here.
Well, I guess when I'm talking about a shift is the idea of a shift for me is that there's a place where you find yourself and then you have to move to a new place. It's a shift of whatever it is you're going to do. Like it could be a shift of why did you decide to do some of the shows that you're doing now? There had to be a decision process in there. Was that easy for you to do, or has making decisions, which we're calling a shift, always been easy, or do you have a process that you use to do that?
Well, I would go back to my youth, and when I left high school, I went to college in Las Vegas, at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, to study hotel management, thinking that I would be in the hotel business.
Ah.
So I think my first major shift came at that time. when you think you're going to go into business in the hotel business, and you've not only have I studied it, but I was working in Las Vegas at a hotel, and then becoming in the management trainee program for the Del Webb company. And when I finished college, I had been dabbling in show business. I had some friends that were comedic. Hey, there's a bar doing a comedy night. Let's go and get up. And then I started working in the entertainment department, which of course seemed natural for me. My dad was an entertainer. He was vice president of entertainment at the Sahara Hotel. And I worked in the entertainment department. I started out as a gopher, but soon I started to do things and come up with things. And one day the entertainment director said, hey, we've got all these people that want to audition to be in the lounge.
Yeah.
And when you say lounge, that can mean anything to anybody. So in Las Vegas, we had a showroom that held what I call the fire count, what you're allowed to bring in for the fire marshal would say you could hold 620 for dinner and 720 for the cocktail show, where the tables folded up and you would just, there wouldn't be dinner served. So you could put 100 more people in the room. But in those days, my dad, Don Rickles, Shecky Green, Flip Wilson, Ronan Martin, Johnny Carson, who at the time on The Tonight Show, the hottest act in the country, and we put 1,200 people with a shoehorn into that room. So I was hanging out around entertainment. I got to watch all these incredible entertainers, and the lounge held 150 people, although there were nights when we squeezed 220, 230 people in there. And everybody wanted to audition to become a performer in the lounge. So the entertainment director said, look, I got all these people that want to audition. Why don't you audition them? And now we have to go back in technology, because here we are on Skype and we can talk to each other. This is all yeah. Star Trek stuff. If you go back to then, an act that wanted to submit themselves originally just brought by an 8x10 picture of either themselves or a picture yes. of their act. You know, this is yes. the band, six people. And they would bring maybe a cassette tape of here's a song of us doing. Eventually we went from that to videotapes, to either beta or VHS, and obviously we know how far we've come today. Everybody shoots something, puts it up on YouTube. But so I would sit there and go through all this stuff, and then I would call the acts that I thought were good enough to audition. And once one person heard that they could audition, everybody wanted to audition live. So we had a dark night. I said to the entertainment director, let's just bring everybody in on the off night and I'll watch everybody. And so we did that. And then several things happened as a result of that, as you start to describe a shift. One, you're a union hotel, so you have to have a union stagehand to do that. So that employs a guy an extra night. Then the musicians union got involved and said, well, you're going to have people up there. You're putting musicians out of work by letting them come in. So you've got to pay the musicians. So if I got to pay them, I'm going to put them on stage and have rehearsal and let singers sing, and on and on and on. And then all the people wanted to come support their friends that are auditioning. And we went from an audition night to what became Sandy Hackett's Talent Showcase at the O'Hara Hotel. It became a night of entertainment. Then we needed a host to introduce all the acts, and I became the producer and the host. And eventually, I'm going to college full time, and doing this on Mondays. And the problem with I couldn't just do it Monday night. I had to come in Monday afternoon and have rehearsal for the nighttime show. And everybody came to see this thing, and we became the hottest thing on the strip because everybody wanted to get up. And over the years, first time on stage in Las Vegas, Howie Mandel, Andrew Dice Clay, Patti Benatar, Kenny Kerr, who now has since passed away, and a lot of other people like that that came through and became Las Vegas staples and got their opportunity. So for me, the shift was, yes, I'm going to hotel school. I'm going to be in the hotel business, but I've been dabbling in entertainment. And at the end of hotel school, I got a job offer from Marriott that was one third of what I was already making.
Oh.
And they said, you know, we'd love to have you come. And you had to leave your home, wherever you were. It was like an athlete being drafted. And so now I'm drafted by Marriott, and they want me to move to Washington, D.C. for a training program for 6 months. Then they put you in a place for 3 years, and then after your 3 years, then you get to decide where you want to go at one-third the salary. And I went, I'm not going.
Right.
I thought this is what you wanted to do. I did until you told me I was going to make one third of what I'm making. And I stayed and followed my heart and stayed, kept doing more and more show business stuff.
Yeah. And actually, I guess that was what you did, is you followed your heart, which was show business. But money actually played into it too. It was obviously they weren't valuing as much as what you were getting already.
It really was my heart. The money was just a reason to tell them I'm not coming. I loved Las Vegas. I loved where I was living. I loved my style, my lifestyle. I loved doing the showcase. The showcase was giving me opportunities to get up and do stand up at other places. I started to get job offers as a comedian, as a host. I was getting up anywhere else I could. Then we started another showcase at another Sahara property up in Reno. And I would do Sunday night in Reno. I would fly up Sunday morning and do the showcase there. I'd come home Monday morning and do the showcase there. So I was working two nights a week in the business. Then I started to get offers for comedy clubs and stuff like that. And it just grew and grew and grew. So my intentional, it wasn't an intentional shift. It was like I jumped into the river and I went, this is much more palatable to me to be in show business than it is to stay in the hotel business.
That makes complete sense. And I like that analogy of jumping into the river, because the river is going that way. Why not go with it?
Exactly. And I also felt I wasn't, you know, some people jump into the river and are trying to swim upstream.
Right. You went with the way it was going.
I was floating in and having the time of my life.
So has it always been like that from then on? Or have there been times where you've had to really say, this is, I've got to make a decision that the river's not flowing. I've got to choose another river, so to speak.
I think for everybody, there's times in your life when you make decisions about a lot of things. So at the time that Marriott said, now I was being offered a full-time job in the hotel business to pursue my career. And if you went on their management training course, you were on track to eventually become an executive at Marriott, you know, and a general manager, and somewhere run your own property.
Yeah.
And so at the time, I chose not to do that. Now I was saying no to that and staying where I was doing both. I was in the management training program for Del Webb, which was winding down as they had been sold, and they were kind of phasing that out. I was in show business a couple nights a week. I was getting more show business opportunities, but I was still working in the hotel. I was working in the casino. Mm-hmm. And I had this wonderful relationship with the schedule guy who said, we'll give you Monday off, we'll give you Sunday off, and I'll give you time off to go do your jobs. But when you're not on the job doing what you love, and I call you, because I was on what they call extra board. They always carried 40 or 50 dealers extra for holiday weekends, you know, big players, tournaments, stuff like that. You will always answer the phone and you'll always come in when I need you. And I said, deal. And that relationship was wonderful for 3 years. And then he moved on and they put a new guy in charge. And he called me in and he said, and I got my schedule. And I said, well, I've got an agreement in place here where I get Sunday and Monday off because I'm actually still working for the hotel that you work for. And you have to give me off to run the showcase up in Reno and in Las Vegas. And he said, yeah, okay. But I still need you to come in this week. And I said, well, I've got a comedy job coming up and I need a couple weeks off. And he goes, I don't do that with my dealers. You don't tell me when you work. And I said, but that's been my agreement. And he said, well, that's no longer your agreement. You're a dealer and that's when you'll be here. And I said, I'm not coming in. He said, what do you mean you're not coming in? I said, you can't do that. And he said, then you're fired. And I said, no, you may not fire me. I quit. And so at that point, that was a shift because I was no longer where I now had to either decide full time where I was pointing off camera, where I was headed. And my decision was to follow my heart and go. He's going, you're a 21 deal. I go, I'm not going to be dealing 21 the rest of my life. I'm going to go pursue my heart and follow show business.
Right. Which is what you've done. So throughout the years, that's what you've done. It seems to me that, look, you know, being an outsider looking in, that it's just blossomed through the years, that you keep moving on to more and more things.
Well, it has its ups and downs. I mean, show business is not easy. My dad said it takes 10 years to become a working comedian. He was right almost to the day from when when you're starting out, you're calling everybody, getting up anywhere you can. Anything with anybody will give you stage time, you're doing. And it took about 10 years until people started calling me going, you know who would be good on this? Let's get Sandy Hackett. And the bad part about when you talk about being the son of someone famous, is someone especially as successful and famous as my father, who at the time I was getting into this was at the pinnacle of his success in the 70s, he had had been in five of the top grossing films of the 60s. Mad, 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 Mad World, number one grossing comedy of all time when it came out. Music Man, number one grossing musical of all time when it came out. And then he did Love Bug, Disney's number one grossing film of all time when it came out. So he was in three of the top grossing films of the decade and did some other films and a run on Broadway. So I'm chasing that type of success. Trying to find my own. And after 10 years, people started calling me going, let's get Sandy Hackett. He would be good. Wow. My dad said he's 10 years to become a working comedian, 20 years to become a great comedian. That's how long it takes to become great in the eyes of my father. And I think he was right.
I think that for all of us, that's a really good thing to hear, because all of us in whatever field we're in, whoever's listening, everybody has their own dream and passion, no matter what it is. And sometimes it feels like you're doing it and you're doing it and you're doing it and nothing's coming of it. So to hear that it's 10 years and then another 10 years before you're actually great at it, I think that goes across the board to many different fields.
Yeah. And there are a lot of people that have dreams, but there are also a lot of people, I think, that don't have dreams. They don't know what they want to do. My dad said to me, do something you love and you'll never work a day in your life. And I think maybe 80% of the populace doesn't do something they love. They do something they think they have to do, or that's where they went, or that's what they ended up in. But they don't love it. The work is hell, and they just go there to pay the bills and do it.
Yes. And you know what? That is actually what's one of the reasons for this podcast, is to inspire people who are listening, who are doing things that they don't want to be doing, to inspire them to take that step towards follow your heart. Because in the end, making money is never going to fulfill the reason that we're here in the first place. So,
my dad said when I started doing comedy, do you like doing comedy? I said, yeah. That was my impression of my father, by the way.
I saw that.
And I said, yeah, I love it. He says, if you don't like doing it for free, the money will never make a difference. So that was very prophetic to me, because even he just loved what he did.
Yeah.
But as a side, he would say if he could have put on a different face when he left the stage and had his anonymity, and just walked around as a regular person without everybody going, buddy, hey, buddy. And like the Pillsbury Doughboy, where everybody wanted to grab his face and touch him, he would have been much happier. So I'll tell you a shift story, because sometimes we make choices and sometimes choices are made for us. So I had worked very hard to open a comedy club in Laughlin, Nevada, at one of the hotel casinos. And it started out very, very slow. Couldn't get people, nobody came. We were getting an audience of 8 people, 12 people, 15 people. And after about 6 weeks, all of a sudden one night, the place filled up. I don't know where they came from. I don't know why that night, but I'm going, oh my God, this is it. This is, we've arrived.
Yeah.
I was there for 8 years. And management changed several times at the hotel. It got bought, it got sold. A new guy came in, was going to get rid of me, but then he came in one night and decided to keep me. And finally, a guy came in and came in to say hello. And the management prior to him had done a marketing survey in the property and found that Sandy Hackett's Comedy Club, and at that time it was Gold River Hotel and Casino in Laughlin, Nevada, was the highest rated department on the property, hiring the casino, the restaurants, the rooms, housekeeping, number one. So this next guy comes in and he calls me in about a month after he's been there, and he says, "Oh, I want to do things with you. We hear great things. Everybody said that, you know, we're going to do some bigger things. I got the big plans." Well, I'm thinking, okay, so my job is still secure and we're going to move along. And about another month later, I get a call from the operator, and she says, "You know, a guy wants to see you in his office." So I come up there and I walk in. I said, "You want to see me?" So he goes, "Get out." Oh. I said, "I'm sorry. I was told you wanted to see me." He says, "Get out. I can come back later." "No, get out." I said, I don't understand. "Didn't you want to see me?" "Yes, I wanted to see you to tell you to get out." And that cold, that harsh, that, and I'm going, "What?" He says, the comedy club, this thing you're doing here, I want to get rid of it. I want it out of here." I said, "It's the beginning of the week. I just have everybody. Can we finish up the week?" "Yeah, if you have to, but then I want you out of here." I said, "Did I do something wrong?" "No, we're going to move the Kino up to where you are, and we don't need you anymore."
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm bringing, at that time, 1,000 to 2,000 people a week onto the property from outside to our club. And I was devastated. So I went that night. I used to live in Las Vegas, and I would stay at the hotel, but I'd go back and forth a lot to my house in Las Vegas, 90-mile drive. So I drive home that night, and I call my dad in the morning, and I was crying. I was devastated. And my dad had always been able to fix everything.
Yeah.
And I told him what had happened. He says, "Well, you know what you got to do." And I went, "Oh, wow, good. My dad's got the answer." And I said, "No, what?" He goes, "Pack."
Oh.
And at that time, there was a lot of growing. You should laugh.
Well, that's it.
It was a shift. It was growing up to realize,
yeah,
I was at an age now, a grown man with a business running. My dad couldn't help. Probably was frustrating for him that he couldn't get involved in some way. And my time there was over, and I was going to have to reinvent myself or who I was, what I did, because I'd been doing this for 8 years.
Yes.
And I no longer had to go for 5 years of my life. I traveled as a comedian, going everywhere, bus, a plane, a train, a cruise ship, rental car, going from job to job to job every week in a different city. And then I opened my own club, so I didn't have to be constantly on the road. And now that opportunity was gone.
Wow. That is definitely a shift. And it's quite a shift story. And I could keep on talking to you for hours, but I have to ask you now where people can find you. Where's the best place for people? Is there a website that people can go to see what you're up to? I know they eventually want to come see your show, but where would they go to find out more about you?
Contact me and annoy me.
Yeah, annoy you. Yeah. Do you want that? Maybe you want to be anonymous.
Well, I have a website that is me for my stand-up comedy, and is me. It probably needs to be updated because we spent most of our time the last 4 or 5 years doing our Rat Pack show, which is Sandy Hackett's Rat Pack show. I produce with my wife, and that's sandysratpack.com. I also have a show I wrote about my father called My Buddy, and that website is mybuddyhackett.com. We have some tour dates coming up in February, in next spring, I should say. And then we're busy working on another new show.
Wow. And what is it? Are you allowed to tell me?
I'm not allowed to tell you. But it's okay. Lisa's writing the music, and she's nothing short of brilliant. I'm amazed that she has her father's ability when it comes to writing a lyric. And people will soon see that in her music. Although in our Rat Pack show, Lisa and her writing partner, Mark, wrote two brand new Christmas songs that are absolutely amazing. And we're putting them both into our holiday version of Sandy Hackett's Rat Pack show. If nothing else, after you followed your heart, you're at least emotionally where you want to be. And if it works out, you'll be happy. And if it doesn't work out, you'll never have to say to yourself, I wonder what it would have been like if I followed my heart.
Right.
And some people are amazingly intuitive and their heart leads them in the right direction. Other people are not. And when they say they followed their heart, did they really? Did you really follow your heart? Did you really make a decision based on your heart or what you thought you needed to do, your responsibility to your spouse, your parents, your children, your work? Or did you go with your heart? Because if you follow your heart and you're happy, then you can be happy. You know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, are you familiar?
Very much so, yes.
You know, so you have to take care of yourself first. You can't take care of anything else until you take care of you. And if you're not happy, you can't impart happiness to everything else around you. Eventually, you'll contaminate what you're trying to do, or you'll be contaminated by your own unhappiness.
Right. Wow, that is such a wonderful answer, and I hope that that people listening, and I know I'm going to examine, make sure I'm always following my heart, because that's wonderful advice. Thank you so much for giving it to us.
You're welcome, Becca.
And I hope that Lisa promises me that someday I get to come see your show, so I'm looking forward to meeting you in person.
I look forward to that also. Thank you for having me as a guest.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye. At the end of this interview, I asked Sandy the standard question, what is the one piece of advice that you would give anyone else in the midst of shifting a life story? You didn't hear me ask the question because our recording blanked out for a few minutes, but you did hear his answer, and his answer is the shift hack for today. Follow your heart. Sometimes following your heart can look very strange and unsettling to your family and friends, but in the end, it always works out best for everyone. I know you love what Sandy had to say, and we would both appreciate your spreading the message with your comments on his podcast at theshift.com and ratings and reviews on iTunes. Links to find Sandy and also to his wife Lisa's podcast are in the show notes at theshift.com/Sandy Hackett or theshift.com/podcast, where you will find the links to all podcasts. While you are there, if you haven't already, subscribe to the Shift list and also to the podcast. That way, you are always in the know. The next two episodes will be the monthly podcast, this one on December, and then the lovely Mary Mercadante will share her unique and beautiful way of looking at the world and a few business and writing tips as well. Till next time. Let's keep shifting the story together.